Hello, you lovely lot. I wanted to take a moment to share an exciting announcement with you all. I will be doing a live show for Happy Mum, Happy Baby at the Podcast Show in London on the 22nd of May. This will be a live episode of this very podcast featuring me and a very special, soon to be announced, guest. Get ready for a candid conversation, unfiltered truths, laughs, invaluable non-judgmental advice, and lived experiences. Dive into the complexities of parenting while juggling work, relationships, and personal growth. And we'll be talking beyond the baby years. As well as the live episode, the show will also include a Q&A with both me and my guest. Tickets go on sale this Friday the 26th of April at 10 a.m, but anyone who is part of the Happy Mum Happy Baby newsletter will be getting early access to tickets on Wednesday the 24th of April at 10 a.m. To sign up to the newsletter and for more information about the event, please head to happymumhappybaby.com/events. I can't wait to see you there.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
And welcome to another episode of Happy Mum, Happy Baby, the podcast. Now, this is a special bonus episode. As avid listeners will know, the podcast has been sponsored by Fisher-Price for the last two series. Go Fisher-Price. So today we thought we would do an extra special episode, which is all around the emphasis of letting kids be kids through play. Nice, simple, makes sense. I've got to say, when Buzz first arrived, I literally thought I had to stimulate him in every single way. We went to four classes from 10 weeks old. It was literally a case of four classes a week because I thought that was the right thing to do. Drove myself absolutely bonkers thinking that this is what he needed to be the best person that he could be. And then I don't know when it switched. I think I heard something on the radio or read something about actually just taking a step back and letting them play was probably a little bit better for them at a certain point, rather than me just shoving toys in their faces. So it's made me change the way I look at things over the years. And I have to say that first time that I did sit back and just, you know, put a few toys out, that I did feel a little bit lazy, but I did enjoy that hot drink. It felt amazing. So today, to talk about the subject of play, it's not just me. It's not just me prattling on about my children. I have three special guests. Three. Not one, not two, but three. They're very excited. So we have blogger Charlotte Louise Taylor. Let's use your full name.
Oh, why not?
Play expert Amanda Gummer and gender stereotype campaigner from Let Toys Be Toys, Jess Day. Hi.
Hello.
Now, there are so many voices today. We've never done it with three guests before. So if you could just go around, this is the only time I'm going to go around the table, but if you could just say a little bit about yourself and why you're here today or what you do, or just say a little bit about you. Charlotte, let's start with you.
I'm going to go first, am I? Okay, I'm Charlotte and I'm 30 this year and I've got three children now. I've actually got a six-week-old baby who's with his dad at home at the moment, which I miss him. I really, really do. But no, I am a blogger, YouTuber. I stumbled into this and I'm just sharing my journey online, really, and loving being a mum and sometimes not loving being a mum. But yeah, that's me in a nutshell.
I'm Jess. I've got two kids. My kids are 12 and 9. And I'm a volunteer campaigner in the spare time I have between parenting and a job with the Let Toys Be Toys campaign.
And what is the Let Toys Be Toys campaign?
So we've been running for about 5 years now, and it was originally a group of parents who got together on Mumsnet and around a thread that somebody posted a thread saying, is it just me, or is the way that toys are and products are marketed to children by gender got out of hand? And very quickly this turned into a discussion where people agreed that actually, yes, it had, and maybe that a group of us should get together and do something about it. And here we are 5 years later. 15 retailers have changed their signage and their marketing practices, and 11 publishers have stopped publishing books with for girls or for boys on the covers.
So. That's amazing. And Amanda?
I'm Amanda Gemma. I run Fundamentally Children, which is a company specialising in child development, play and parenting. And we're home of the Good Toy Guide and the Good App Guide. So we review products and explain their developmental benefits. So, you know, whether that's anything from a doll's house to a Thomas the Tank Engine to a space rocket to a gardening set to a kitchen, whatever it is, we believe that most toys have a place in a balanced play diet, and we encourage parents to give their kids a sort of a range of activities. And like you say, you don't need to be the children's entertainer 24/7. You can sit back and let them play.
But it feels so strange, doesn't it, to just sit back? I think especially that first time.
It does, but I think if you realise what they're getting from it, and that's what we try and help parents understand, is that you're not being lazy. Actually, A, taking some time for you is really important, but actually letting kids get bored is important, and letting them choose what they want to do and sort of try the what if. But, you know, they need a range of playmates, they need a range of play opportunities, and they can play with their siblings, their friends, on their own, with you. That's all good stuff. But mix it up and don't feel like you have to be all down to the parents. I think that's really important.
So if we all look back to our childhoods, how important was play for you?
Oh, massively important. I mean, the memories that we have of that kind of free-range childhood, slightly older than a lot of the people around here, but, you know, in the 70s and
I would say I was free-range.
Okay, perfect. And there are still many free-range kids today. I think the parents have to make a commitment to making their kids free range. I think it's very easy to get hyped up with the stranger danger and the safety and the fears and that sort of pressure parenting.
Do you think that's the thing then, that it used to just be that was the way that kids were brought up, and now it's actually you've got to make more of a conscious effort?
Yeah, I think so. I think if you have to sort of make positive decisions about the way you want to parent and be prepared to sort of fight your corner if you believe that kids should be outside and should be playing freely. And there's a lot of sort of cotton wooling of children and that kind of over safety, over very intense relationship that parents can have with their children if they're sort of hothousing them and on them and making sure that everything is, you know, for their benefit and centres around them. And it actually doesn't do the kids any favours.
So I guess really they've got to experience different emotions as well.
Yeah. Yeah. If you let the children have that experience of, you know, being upset, being left out, being scared, being, you know, all of those kind of fairly challenging emotions when they're little and learn how to deal with them, they'll be much more. And when the consequences are fairly small and minor, they'll be much more equipped to deal with them positively when they're older and the consequences are much more severe.
That's really interesting. Jess, were you free range?
I'm one of four. So I had quite a bit older sisters and a younger sister. And so there wasn't a lot of hovering over us by my parents because how could you with four of us at home? So, yes, I guess we had a lot more kind of independent play, I suppose, than seems to be kind of the expectation now. And also, yes, the expectation that kids were out unsupervised in a way that just doesn't seem to happen anymore. And I think a lot of that, in fairness, is not just down to parents. It's very hard to be the parent who lets their kid walk home in year four when nobody else does or whatever. Mm-hmm. But also road safety. You know, I was talking to my kids this morning, actually, about how I used to play badminton in the street with a friend outside my friend's house because nobody on that street had a car. And so you could play badminton in the street. And they thought this was hilarious because, you know, that couldn't happen anymore. And so, you know, I think a lot of it is just the traffic volume mean that the parents are, you know, understandably reluctant. But of course the consequences of that, as Amanda says, are, you know, that the level of supervision in children's lives mean they just don't have to get to grips with a lot of things independently in the same sort of age.
Charlotte?
It's really funny that you should bring this topic up because I told my mum what I was doing yesterday. We got a little bit excited. And she was saying, well, let me tell you about my childhood. And she was saying that she would leave the house. She has an identical twin sister and a younger sister. They would leave the house early in the morning, wouldn't even say to my grandma and gramps that they were going anywhere. They would find horses in a field. They would, like, get on top of them, ride them merrily throughout fields and streams and goodness knows what else, and then come home covered in leeches. And I was thinking, if I did that as a kid, you would have really told me off. And I think it's really difficult because I've got really strong memories of playing out with my brother and my friends when I was younger, but already I'm seeing a change between my childhood, and I had my eldest at 23, so I wasn't the youngest mum ever, but I can still remember very clearly what that was like, and we do have a lot of similarities between us in what we're experiencing now. But I want my kids to have the same sort of upbringing that I had. Maybe not what my mum had, but it's hard to do it. It's frightening sometimes to let them go, and I really struggle to sort of cut the apron strings. And I know my eldest is 5, so it's not like I've got to do that anytime soon, but it's scary to make those choices and know that they're the right ones. And I let my daughter run around in a nappy in the garden when it's nice, but you think, oh, should I be making sure that she's got clothes on in case she climbs a tree and scrapes a knee? And, oh, she sounds like Maria from Sound of Music. But that's the thing, you don't know, do you? And things change a lot. And I think that's hard as a parent to sort of match up your expectations and dreams for your kids with what the reality is.
Mm. So with that in mind, how has everyone got about encouraging their children to play? Charlotte?
I try and take a step back as much as I can. And if I can be really honest, I don't know about you, but I'm not a playful mum. I'm really good at cuddles and I'm really good at, you know, like, let's read some books or cook or something. But I really struggle with playtime. I don't feel like I can always let myself go. My other half is great at being like a dinosaur or anything like that. You can climb all over him. But I'm like, okay, let's be fun now. And I do find it hard, but I like to take a step back. I've got almost a 4-year age gap between my eldest and my middle child. And then obviously my 6-week-old doesn't really do much other than like sleep at the moment. Mm-hmm. But I like to just let them be kids, like just let them do what suits them. My middle child, my daughter, Daisy, she's 2. She does have a thing for playing with toys that are a bit older than what she should be playing with. And I just try and monitor that. I don't want to be in there all the time, like, oh, you take that off you, it's too old for you. And I just try and sort of enjoy them for what they are. They like to get muddy and messy and trash my house, but sometimes you just got to let go and know that at bedtime you can clean it all up again.
But
that's just my general approach, is just try and let them make the right decisions and follow their lead.
Yeah. We get a lot of parents who say, I don't know how to play with my children. What am I supposed to do? And it becomes like a chore. It's something on their to-do list and they're sort of seen as a bad parent if they don't play with their children.
Yes.
And that's so not the case, because part of the biggest thing that you can give your children is a happy, healthy role model to copy and learn from. So learning what makes you happy. And if you like, you know, I bet you're more playful than you think you are. But the fact that you don't want to become a dinosaur or give them piggyback rides around the garden doesn't make you a non-playful mum. You can, you know, help getting them involved in cooking in the kitchen, doing arts and crafts with them, doing, you know, anything, and letting them play. It's all part of the sort of the balanced play diet that they need to have a range of different opportunities. And you don't have to be all things to them. So I hear that a lot from parents, that they feel bad that they don't want to play with their kids. And then they're like, right, well, we're going to have this hour and it's going to be quality fun, we're all, you know, forced family fun, and it's so artificial. And actually the whole thing of play is it's natural and organic, and it should be something that you enjoy as well as they do. So the thing I sort of try and explain to parents who come to me and say, but how do I play, is do what feels natural, do what you enjoy. And if it's a board game, great. If you like something that's got some structure and some rules, play a board game. If you want to do arts and crafts, if you want to do cooking, if you want to go and kick a ball around outside, whatever it is, that's fine. You don't have to be the clown or the, you know, you don't have to make a fool of yourself if that feels uncomfortable, because there are plenty of children around and other parents and friends and family that will, you know, fill that role. So it's about making play good for everybody, because when it's fun for everybody, you do more of it. So it's a kind of, you want to make sure it doesn't become a chore.
it's another thing, though, isn't it? As a parent, it's like parent guilt, mum guilt. Like, what have I done wrong today? Like, I didn't do that enough, and I snapped because she didn't follow the rules because she's two. And it's just one of those. And you try and play with your nearly six-year-old, who has, you know, a sense of self a bit more. And then my two-year-old's like, oh, no, we're just going to destroy all of this, break everything up. And then you think, oh, no, this isn't going well. And like you said, it does become forced, and then it's disappointing, isn't it? Because it didn't go beautifully and serenely like you expected it to from the movie. So thank you. I feel like I can listen to you and I feel better now.
Well, I guess that's the thing. Movies, what we see on Instagram, you know, or on, you know, online, anywhere, you know, it's not necessarily the whole picture. You know, so seeing someone sit down nicely reading a book to their child or nicely playing with a toy, it doesn't necessarily mean that that lasted more than that second it took to take that photo, yeah, you know? Yeah. And I think that there is another pressure there. And actually realising that maybe the game not going well is a part of learning as well.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, and that's, play is such a unpredictable experience. It's great when things don't go well because kids are suffering. There's a lot of media about kids' mental health at the moment, and there's a pressure that children feel to be perfect because they see all these perfect images, perfect lives. It's Facebook, and parents feel it too. And actually, when things are, kids love slapstick humour. They've when things go wrong. So actually, learning how to deal with mistakes and mess ups and things that go wrong is a really important thing because it allows the kids to fail or allows them to mess up and not feel bad about themselves as well. So when they knock the tower over that they've spent ages building and you just go, oh, here we go again, or when you sort of, you know, make a mess with the paint or whatever it is that you're doing, and the way you deal with the mistakes is just as important for kids as you know, the successes and modelling how to behave, dealing with things when they go wrong and learning to apologise or learning to put it right and all that sort of stuff. Such important stuff.
But there are different levels of play, isn't there? So there's a play that you would experience first, which is playing with your mum or your dad or another you know, older person. And then there's the play, them learning to play on their own and using their imagination. And then if a sibling's involved or if they go to nursery, that's playing with someone their own age. So there's different levels of play, isn't there? And is there a natural progression for those? Do they come at a certain time or...?
So children under the age of about 2.5 tend to play in their own space. They will follow the lead of a more able child or an adult, but they won't play with a peer. So if you put, say Daisy's two.
Yeah, right? Daisy.
So when she's playing with, when you've got play date round, the chances are she will play with the whatever you've got out with another child in the same space, but they won't be interacting particularly well. But give it another year or so and they'll start to work together and do things cooperatively. So things like construction play and everything, you can work together. Whereas if you're doing construction with her now, she's probably building her own tower and her friend will be building their own tower. But, you know, it won't be long before they'll start working on something that's sort of together. And that's because the communication skills are coming up and that kind of social awareness. So the skills that are developing, and that's really important.
Mm. Oh, Bill, my eldest, will be really excited about that because he's trying to get her to be the perfect playmate at the moment. Like, come on, let's do it this way. She's just like, I'm just going to ruin your fun. But it's just the way it is, like siblings as well. But he'll be really excited about that because I think with the eldest, you can see them getting impatient, yeah, thinking, will you just talk or move? And then now she can do those things, but she doesn't do it at all, which is a good lesson for him to learn as well.
And she'll look up to him as well. So when he says, you be the, you know, the boring job or you do the boring task or whatever, she'll just do it because he, you know, until she wises up. But then he will develop the leadership skills and all of that sort of stuff, and she will develop that kind of aspirational, she'll look up to him. And yeah, I mean, they'll fight, but
that started.
Buzz at the moment always takes on the heroic roles. So he's always, you know, the one that's the hero, and he always gives Buddy the baddie. Mm. Always. Like, it's fine, but it's not subliminally, but I don't think he understands quite what, you know, he just gets given an extra prop. And, yeah, you know, that's...
You hold this.
Yeah, you are this person. Is that okay? But I find it interesting thinking about how the differences between how Buzz plays and how Buddy plays. And I do think that sibling thing has a massive part to play in that, because Buzz, as you know, he's had us to play with and then he's had time on his own. And I think that thing when you first bring your baby home and it's, you know, well, it's a newborn, I can't do anything with that. You know, for Buzz, it was like, well, this is disappointing. I thought you'd give me a playmate. He's asleep. And then I think for Buddy, watching his brother play is really, you know, really focused how he plays, actually. And he can go from wanting to climb everything and being absolutely manic to playing with his little figures and doing, you know, acting out little scenes because he's seen Buzz do it. Mm. And it's hard to think what part of that is just because that's because Buddy's a completely different child, and how much of that has been, you know, brought about because he's seen his older sibling playing that way.
I remember my son is just over 2 years younger than my daughter, and she was a very robust character, perhaps I might say, when I was a toddler. She would clear the playhouse at toddler group. It was awful. I could never drink a cup of tea because I'd have to make sure she wasn't biting people. She was quite hard work. My son is a much calmer, gentler character. And I can remember when he was maybe one, I was sitting on the floor in the bedroom playing Row Your Boat with his sister. And he came up and she tried to muscle in. And I said, no, it's his turn. You have to wait. And at the end of the song, he spontaneously got up and moved out of the way. Oh. And so that she could sit down. Oh. And I can remember thinking, well, Rachel would never have done that. But also just going, oh, my gosh, you know, he's learning, yeah, not just sort of the kind of the play things that you're talking about, but actually turn-taking is coming. We weren't talking about turn-taking. You know, he was much too young, we thought. But actually he was already taking in those concepts because he had somebody to take turns with. And so that's, you know, it's very tempting to think of younger children of having this less rich environment, play environment, because they don't get as much adult attention. But he, in many ways, had this much richer play environment, yeah, because, like you say, he was learning so much from what she was doing, and stuff that I wouldn't have expected. That, you know, that was a real surprise to me. And actually, he shared and took turns spontaneously at a really very young age.
Yeah, I think parents, you sort of, the firstborn is sort of doted on and has is quite intense, and by the second, third, fourth, whatever, the parents maybe feel that they aren't getting the attention that the first one got. But what they forget is that child has more people to give it attention. So whereas before it was just the parents, then it's got siblings, and so you've got, the child isn't suffering, it's just getting the attention from different places. So I think it's
And a constant cabaret of stuff going on.
I always think it's really interesting when people say, I don't understand how they're so different when they're brought into the same environment. But they weren't. There's another sibling there. They were not brought into the same environment.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
But it's an interesting shift that we've seen. And I mean, one of the reasons that the campaign that Let Toys Be Toys launched is because of this feeling that the way that toys were being marketed by gender had really gone a very long way. And actually, you know, I grew up in the 70s and I have three sisters. There were no boys in our house, but we had trains and cars and things that you might categorise as boys' toys, and certainly would have been under the boys' stuff shelf in the toy shops that we were looking at when we launched our campaign. So actually, you know, how come we ended up in a situation where, you know, in the 1990s and 2000s, you've got more dads than ever doing hands-on dadding and more women moving into traditional male careers, but we've actually got an increase in this kind of gendered marketing of people, you know, nudging children into particular boxes, because, you know, as you say, play is play. All of this stuff, you know, it all generates the play with toys and with nurturing, with dolls and with nurturing toys is such a great opportunity to imitate the people around you and to practice those nurturing and caring skills, which are important for any human being, not just the female half of the population.
Yeah. So true. Are there things that parents can do to take away that stigma with, you know, stereotyping certain toys, for like saying you can't play with that because that's a girl's toy, or...
Well, I think you just let the kids lead, let them choose, and giving them a cross section of toys, a nice sort of balance of, you know, indoor outdoor toys, you know, quiet toys, noisy toys, creative toys, or you know, a real sort of selection. And then letting them go for it. Don't have anything that's off limits, because 9 times out of 10, if you ban something for kids, it just becomes so much more attractive. So, you know.
So how do we go about choosing appropriate toys for our children? Like, do we go age? Charlotte, when you're shopping for your kids, do you look at the age thing? Like, what do you do to kind of go, oh?
Well, Daisy just turned 2 on Saturday, and well, I've just had a baby, so we're a bit late in the day on like getting toys. It was quite bad, really. But I'll put my hands up in the air. Sometimes I do a quick Google, like best toys for 2-year-olds in 2018, and see if there's anything that's come up. I've been guilty in the past, because I had a boy first, of Googling, you know, girls' toys and then thinking, what am I doing? What is this? So now if I buy presents for like friends, I'm like, what does such and such like?
Yeah.
Tell me what they like, because I don't want to put them in a box and make a mistake and give them something that's wasted. But a lot of the time I just follow what Daisy likes, what Bill likes. Stanley doesn't like anything at the moment, but I try and think, well, what are they really into, and go from there. So for Easter, for example, there's a thing now, isn't there, about these Easter baskets and like treating your kids. I just got eggs when I was little, but I feel like I have to do that now. So they had like a few little crafts and stuff, and I thought I'd get them a gift because I don't want to give them too much chocolate. And then I ended up buying them 2 like dinosaur toys that you stick on your finger and they go like, and I posted about it on Instagram, I think it was, and someone commented like, go you for getting Daisy a dinosaur too. And I thought, it didn't even occur to me to think that I shouldn't. But it's one of those things, isn't it? I just follow their cues. And there are toys that I get a little bit excited about them playing with. So, you know, when Daisy got a Barbie, I was excited. I like them, but I don't force them on her. I'm still waiting for Sylvanian families to kick in and all of that jazz. I loved them. But a lot of the time, you know, I try not to put them in a box. And if I ever have done it, I try and sort of check myself before I wreck myself.
That's so funny, though, when you're talking about retro toys and the toys that you loved.
Yeah.
I actually, when I'm buying for other people's children, either I ask Buzz, what does so-and-so like? Or I think, what did I like? Whether that's a book, or whether that's a game, or whatever it is. And then I get really excited about that child getting it, because I'm like, I had so much fun with this. You are too.
Yeah, it's like the perfect present. I've needed it. I've got this.
Yeah. So when you go about buying things, Amanda, what do you look for?
Well,
what would you recommend us look for?
Okay, so I would always recommend you go to the Good Toy Guy, because that's got the kind of the filters you can search for age or interests or subject.
I've never heard of this.
No, I haven't.
Never heard of this.
Well, it's a good job I'm here.
How would you go about picking toys
for my kids? Sorry. So I, again, take my lead from them.
Mm-hmm.
I always like trying before I buy. So if it's something that I've seen at a friend's house that they've particularly enjoyed, and they may not have registered it, and they may not be asking for it, but I might have seen how they played with their friends or something, I tended to log that.
I love that. Go over there in that corner.
Yeah, go try that.
Try it. Tell me if you like it.
Press a few buttons. Yeah. Get back to me.
See what it does. Come, give me your feedback.
Especially if they were older kids as well, because you'd sort of go, okay, if they're playing with sort of friends who are a year or two ahead, they would always have that next stage. So that was always really helpful. And then I'm like you, I saved a lot of my old toys or my mum saved a lot of my toys from when I was a kid. So, they came back out the loft.
I've got to say, my sister bought me for Christmas one year. It was a retro Fisher-Price thing, actually.
Oh.
So we used to make up radio shows as siblings. It was called Hangar 17. I was the main host of it. Georgie used to do gymnastic routines, which you'd think wouldn't work on the radio, but it really did. And Mario would do the weather. But it was this brown Fisher-Price recorder, and it went everywhere with us. And we've got tapes of us sort of, you know, talking to each other on it. And my sister got one for me a couple of years ago, and I've never cried so much at a Christmas present. But it's so true that those presents, those toys, they really stick with you. They really stay with you, and your childhood is sort of cemented in them in a way.
That's so lovely.
I know.
I tell you, it's heartbreaking though when you have your treasured toy and you get it down from the loft and the kids go, yeah.
Yeah, can you imagine all those school friends? I'm really excited for them to get their presents and they're like, whatever.
Yeah, no, in this day and age as well, you're like, look at it, isn't it great? And then they're like, what does it do? Does it make noises or does it move? And you're like, no, you do this. And then they're just not interested, are they? I think we're old fashioned now.
Well, I guess we're also, I'll bring you in here, Jess. We also are at the moment going with this whole technology thing. There's this whole other argument that's going on about technology versus traditional play, whether that's role play or whatever. I would like to think there's a place for everything.
Absolutely.
Because I don't want one of my boys to go to school and suddenly, you know, everyone else knows how to work a tablet and he's behind because he has no idea what's going on. But at the same time, I know how much my boys love role play and love like running around the house, and literally they're constantly running. It's the only time I can pin them down to even go on a tablet is if we're flying. That's the only time they would do it. But is there a worry when it comes to technology and traditional play?
I don't know. I mean, speaking personally, we didn't use, you know, my kids didn't have access to tablets and things when they were smaller. They do now. And we have, it's interesting actually, because they're old enough now that we've had, you know, a family conversation about agreeing what the ground rules should be around screen time. And they've contributed to deciding what those. So it's not that we've gone, right, you get 30 minutes a day and this is how it works. We said, what seems fair to you? And so what we came to was that they were allowed up to 30 minutes a day on the tablet or the computer, not counting homework, but they were allowed unlimited TV time because they hardly ever watched the television, provided they always let everybody else know what they were watching so anyone else could join in. Because one thing I find really interesting is, of course, as a family, I can remember as a child having, you know, six of us around the telly watching things together, and we never do that. You know, it's because people's TV watching habits are very different now. And actually, once we brought in that rule and they'd come and say, oh, you know, we're going to watch an episode of Junior Bake Off or whatever, and actually we'd all pile in and watch it, even though it was on iPlayer and it was, you know, at a particular time. And that was really interesting because that was their rule, and they still don't watch much television. It's maybe twice a week or something, but that kind of no more than half an hour a day was their proposal, and they were quite happy with. Because my concern always was, particularly when they were smaller, is that, not that I was terribly concerned about what, you know, it's not too difficult to target their screen time onto particular things that you might think are educational. It's what it's displacing, you know, it's the how much is it in eating into stuff that actually gets a child to interact and is spontaneously coming from them. Because it's, you know, it's essentially a fairly passive experience, really. You know, you're following somebody else's narrative, even in a game, really. So it's not creative in the same way that, you know, emotionally processing your day through small world play or whatever it is. And so it was something we took the decision because I feel like, you know, I've learned how to learn an iPad pretty swiftly, and they didn't exist when I was a kid, so I'm not worried about them keeping up, really.
I think it depends on what they're doing on the screens. And technology, I think, has gone from being the add-on to being a bit gimmicky to actually some of the companies have got some really clever uses of tech. And in terms of the balanced play diet, what you want, the sort of the superfoods, are the active, social, imaginative, free, child-led play. And if you can get that with technology, great. And what you want to really limit is the sedentary, solitary, passive play, which is the staring at a screen and just kind of receiving it. But technology, it shouldn't be demonised in the way that it sort of was, because actually there's quite a lot of good tech now that's employed in toys and on screens, you know, through the apps and everything, that actually does encourage social, imaginative, active play. So you're actually, as long as the kids are getting the play type, I don't think it matters whether that comes from traditional toys or tech toys. Mm-hmm. It's about what it facilitates.
So we shouldn't be so scared of it.
No, but I think making sure you understand what play patterns it's kind of facilitating is the key.
I think the whole thing around screen time is fascinating. But I think if I think back to my childhood, is I only think about the play. But then I know that we sat down as a family and watched three soaps back to back. You know, I would try and read. I don't think that affected my upbringing at all, or my creativity or my imagination. I'm an author, you know, I clearly have that side of me. So I guess it's just how technology is progressing and keeping an eye on it.
I mean, it's sort of, you can't deny that times have changed. Like tablets didn't exist when I was little, and I don't really even get to go on mine now because if, you know, if it's available, and we do monitor how much our kids use them, but we do things as well that are like screen time where we always have like family movie like afternoon on a Sunday and we watch like the old classics I used to love as a kid, and we have popcorn and doing that together and like singing along to songs and like seeing the kids enjoy it with us is amazing. And then one thing that I remember really clearly with Daisy, she was born with a cleft palate, and we used to watch nursery rhymes sometimes on like YouTube and things like that, and she would learn them, and speech can sometimes be a bit delayed if you've got a cleft palate, and she had a few favourites. And then when she had her cleft repair, she was in hospital for about a week. It didn't go fantastically well, and the first time she properly smiled was when we sang one of the songs that she knew from, you know, watching YouTube. And it was an amazing thing just to think that we were like comforting her, and like we, you know, when you're hooked up to machines sometimes that's a real gift to still have that like action of play almost, and that interaction and escapism. So that really taught me a lot of lessons with her, that it's not the devil. But it's hard to admit, I think, as a parent, particularly with social media, that sometimes you do need to rely on, people call them the square nanny, don't they? Like, you know, just for a safety perspective. So it's quite hard to say, like, actually, sometimes my kids will use this. I think my kids are quite balanced, happy little individuals, but it's hard to sort of put it out there. It feels like it's a bit naughty.
Well, like I said, I'm sure my mum and dad thought nothing of letting us watch those soaps, which probably weren't even age appropriate, to be honest, even though they were on before Watershed. It did us no damage.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But I think now we're so much more aware of that guilt, and we're so much more aware of the pressure and what we should be doing with our children. And, you know, everything is kind of laid out for us. But it's having things that you don't feel like you have to hide what you're doing. It's being able to be open. And that way, I think then you're more able to listen to other things, like, oh, okay, well, I'm doing this now, and then later on we'll go for a walk outside, or, you know, we'll play with our little people and we'll do whatever. Yeah, otherwise I think we're all just behind closed doors going, I can't admit what I'm doing to anyone. At the end of every podcast, I can't believe we are here at this point. I have to say, I had no idea how this episode was going to go. I've loved it. I feel like I've learned a lot. At the end of every podcast, at the end of every episode, I say three sentences, the start of, and you guys finish them. I've changed them for today. I've changed them. So I'm going to give you each one. So, Amanda, could you please finish this sentence for me? Play is important because...
It's how children learn.
Nice and succinct. I like it. Charlotte, I encourage my children to play by
letting them be kids.
Lovely. And Jess, I help fight play stereotypes by
campaigning with Let Toys Be Toys. And it's, you know, it's a great way, hopefully, to what we've hoped we've done is dial up the conversation on this issue and make it something that people are thinking about and talking about.
And I think it's one of those things that unless you actually hear someone talking about it, you don't really think about how you address different toys and things. So I think, you know, I think I'm very conscious of not saying, well, don't cry because, you know, girls cry and things like that. So when it comes to our toys and our books, it should be exactly the same thing. I'm all for letting my boys play with pink prams and anything pink because that doesn't belong to girls. Right, so that is it. We are now at the end of the episode. Thank you, Charlotte.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Jess.
Thanks.
And thank you, Amanda.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you. This podcast was brought to you by Fisher-Price. Fisher-Price recognises that every child is born with unique gifts and a distinct personality. Our role as parents is to embrace and celebrate who they truly are.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.